Hello everybody, we're back again with a new episode, a lot to talk about. So without further ado, welcome to the brand new episode of Back on Our Podcast. So Joshua, how you doing, man? Hope you enjoyed your weekend.
Yeah, I enjoyed the weekend, but it was quickly ruined by the Ballon d'Or because what the hell was that? I mean, Messi
winning. What
do you mean? Ronaldo being six. Please, can someone explain to me what Ronaldo did the last calendar year that he finished as high as sixth? Like, it's just a joke. Then they invented a new award, Striker of the Year, to appease Lewandowski. I'm honest, if I were Lewandowski, I'll tell them to shove their award up their whatever. I don't need it. How can you? That's a joke. Like, you're just giving him take Striker of the Year. What the hell is Striker of the Year?
Ah, man, I told you that Messi will win it. And this is not even me trying to gloat. But the truth is, at the end of the day, like I was saying to someone, I think there will be a year where they will revisit this 2020 and award Lewandowski his rightful award, because I think, like I said before, I've been following Lewand for a very long time. So I think you already know, I've been following Lewand and Marco Reus for a long time. So they are one of my favorite players. So I think looking at what he achieved 2020, even Messi said it himself, like 2020, it was clear above everyone. But this year, due to the fact that Messi achieved what he achieved with Argentina and the way he carried Barcelona, so I think at the end of the day, they awarded it to Messi. So here's what
the
it is
at the end of the day. Barcelona to what exactly? That's the problem. You might do everything, but at the end of the day, your team still needs to be successful. What did Barcelona do? They won't cop
out
there.
Barcelona was still successful. Let's know. So, we can argue all day.
So basically, I just feel like what's done is done. But on the bright side, Lewandowski is going to hammer Barcelona next week in the Champions League, because now he's going to take
Barcelona will pay for the price. The price of
them. If Bayern wanted to take it easy, no chance of that anymore.
Oh my God. They could have given Lewandowski the award instead, please.
For Europa League.
So is it Barcelona's fault? What is all this?
It's no one's fault. The only way Barcelona go through to the next round of Champions League is if Benfica somehow connive not to win Dynamo Kiev. If not, there's no way Barcelona are getting a point against Bayern.
Well, I'll just say, Lewandowski, please don't take it personal if you're listening to this.
Oh, it's already personal. What the hell do you mean don't take it personal? This was his chance to win. The second time, the first time he was denied that they didn't even award anyone. Then now they gave their favorite. You see the thing about this Ballon d'Or, just quickly, I know we don't really have time. The thing is, there should be a proper standard of voting. You cannot just tell how many journalists, about 180 or so from all over the world, because you have Messi fanboys among these journalists. They're always going to vote for Messi even when he doesn't do anything. And Ronaldo fanboys are always going to vote for Ronaldo. That is why Ronaldo finished as high as sixth. Because if you bring objective people that actually watch football, Ronaldo will not even make the top 10. But because you have Ronaldo fanboys voting, he finished sixth. Because you have Messi fanboys voting, he finished first. We have to find a more credible solution than this nonsense.
Okay, but you know, I asked you in the last episode, if we're trying to be objective, let me be truthful to you. Like I asked you, the only thing you could bring up for Lewandowski in this conversation was goals. And I told you that just scoring goals is good and fine. But when you're now talking about being the best player in the world and you now have Messi, who had a very, very successful season as well, you need to just do more than just score goals. That's what I'm saying. If this was 2020, like even the goals was clear of the rest.
Can I just tell you how biased they are? Yeah. If this was 2020 and Bayern had won the treble,
okay,
and Messi had still won the Copa America with Argentina, I'm telling you, they will still have given Messi.
No, they won't give it to Messi.
No. Messi has a lot of fans, and then his fanboys are always going to vote for him.
No, it's not just about fans. Just hear me out.
Why Ronaldo was top six.
No, just hear me out. It's not just about, for example, like Messi won the Copa America, yeah? He was the best player in the tournament. He finished with the highest goals, assists, chances creation, all of that. All those stats are good and fine. But Lewandowski, the year Lewandowski won all those things, he was the best player in Europe. He was the highest goal scorer in Europe. There are so many things going on for him. Do you understand? Like, you're competing with Messi now. Lewandowski wasn't really competing with anyone in 2020. It was a landslide. It was clear.
41 league goals in 28 games. I don't get what else he has to do. Plus,
I'm telling you, you keep going back to these goals. And now I'll tell you now, Messi in this 2021 season, he's shattered so many goal records, even with this even as low as you people want to rate his standard to be. Because most times Messi's standard you people are rating. Messi became the top goal scorer in Mbappé's history.
Let's just move on because there's no way you're going to tell me Messi deserved it, and apparently I can't convince you either. So let's just move on, please.
Yeah, to me, Lewandowski will get what he deserves one day. That's what I feel.
Of course, because we live in a fantasy world that they will call him back when he's 60 years old to give him 2020 Ballon d'Or.
They will give it to him. I'm saying this with my full chest on the podcast, so. Whenever it happens, I believe one day Lewandowski will get his 2020 Ballon d'Or award. That's just my belief.
One day. What the hell is that? So let's just move on before I lose my mind, because I don't understand what the hell was that was. I don't know. Then you have Mason Greenwood finishing top five of the young best players. Did they think we didn't see that? What did Greenwood do that he was in top five? Like, did you...
Everything. You're disagreeing with everything in this life.
Let's just go.
Okay, what about Pedri? Does Pedri deserve it?
What?
Does Pedri deserve it?
100%.
Okay, cool. What about the Alexia Pula, Putas?
I'll be honest, I don't follow female football much, but I know that a Barcelona player was going to win it. And since she's the one they gave, I have no problem with it. But I knew a Barcelona player.
Okay, thanks for your honesty. For those listening, for the first time, George did not have any issue with any Barcelona player winning anything. So that's good. We finally have a win in this podcast. So let's move on.
Okay, so let's move on. Let's start with the... I don't know. I feel like we should start with La Liga since we just touched on Barcelona. Okay, so let's start with Barcelona's game. And now you're going to call me anti-Barcelona, but Villarreal should have had two clear penalties. One handball, Piqué, extending himself, turning himself to an elastic human being on the floor. And they're telling me it's a natural position, natural on my foot. And then... Okay. You had, I believe it was Eric Garcia pulling down Albiol in the second half. None of those were even taken to VAR. Just shows you how much the big teams are supported. As well as Sevilla should have even had a penalty against Real Madrid, but we'll touch on that later. So these big teams getting the rub of the green every time. Of course, tell me they weren't penalties, right?
Okay, so let me go into the game. So. The first 20 minutes, Barcelona were very, very good. Then I don't understand why Xavi decided to switch the tactics and went man for man. You could see that when they went man for man, Barcelona players were dragged out of position countlessly. And every time Villarreal attacked, they looked threatening. In the penalty situation, I think the PK one was not a penalty because when you're on the floor, you can't control where your hand moves. Let me just land on my points. The PK one wasn't a penalty because when you're on the floor, you can't control your hand movement. That's just be cute. You have to support the way your body has to land. That's the way it is. Then secondly, the Eric Garcia one, that was a penalty because you can't... I've said this thing so many times with defenders doing that nonsense every time. You leave the ball and start dragging your man. That was a penalty, and it was blatant. There's no going about it. There's no hiding it. That was a very clear penalty.
Just out a half truth from you. You said the second was a penalty. You see the first one, the PK own, yeah? The ball was going to the back of the net. Now, we can argue whether Ter Stegen would have saved it or not, but his hand stopped it from going on target. That alone makes it a penalty for me. If maybe the ball was going outside and then hit his hand, I can say fair play. You can decide not to give it because of what you said. He's on the floor. He has to land well, blah, 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 blah. But the ball was on target. And it's not my fault that he slid. He's the one that decided to slide. So the fact that your hand now stops it from reaching the target, for me, that's a penalty. That's all I'll say. For the game itself, what?
The thing is, if we start doing that, that means whenever a player goes to the ground and he hits his hand, no one cares what he wants to try and support his body with.
Yes, if you stop him from going on target, no one cares.
No. If we start doing that, that's where... This is what I'm saying. That when your hand can be close to your body, he's falling on the ground already. He didn't carry his hand. There's a difference. Just hear me out. There's a difference where even if you're going on trying to get to the ground, there is difference where you move your hand towards the direction of the ball. But this way, he didn't move his hand towards the direction of the ball. He was landing on the floor and his hand was going to the natural position as you're landing. So the ball struck his arm. I'm not denying that the ball
struck his arm. Thank you for explaining it like it's a movie that I didn't watch. So the thing is, the funny thing now is, I listened to Shaka Hislop analyze, and he talked about the fact that in referees meetings, referees from Europe, not too dissimilar incident from this, referees from Europe said it was not a penalty. Referees from South America said it was a penalty. And for God's sake, they officiate the same football. It just shows you that there's no uniformity in the rules. Now, according to the law, you're right that it's not a penalty. According to the law applied in European leagues, it's not a penalty because they tell you natural, blah, blah, blah. This is his natural body position, body movement, all those nonsense that they give us. But the same football that referees officiate in South America, they give the same incident as a penalty. So which continent is wrong? We don't know. Are you trying to tell me?
But what I'm saying is...
Are you trying to tell me Europe is always correct? I don't know.
No. See, both of us now, we're trying to be objective. Yeah, I'm not even trying to bring all my feelings like I'm a big Barcelona fan. What I'm saying is, when you start doing, for example, if you're to give the PK one as a penalty, just hear me out. That means any ball that strikes someone trying to balance themselves well in a natural position, even if no one would care now, you now start giving needless penalties. Do you remember, I've forgotten the season where, I think it was last season where there were so many penalties in the Premier League. When the ball strikes your arm, no one cares. They'll give it to you as a penalty. They had to vote for it mid-season.
Yeah, Mourinho was against... That was a joke. You know why? Okay. I'll tell you why there's a difference. So now, for me personally, if you're standing and your hands are beside your body, then and it strikes your hand, no penalty because you did the right thing. You were just standing, just trying to block the shot and it hit your hand, no penalty. But the moment you slide, yeah. Now imagine this thing. So you're sliding. You're trying to make yourself bigger on the ground by sliding, because you can block more. If it's a grounded effort, you can reach more with your legs and your body and your head. Am I right?
Okay.
So you've already made yourself bigger by sliding. Now, if you extend yourself with your hand as well, so now it's not just your head to your leg that can block the shot. It's now from your hand to your leg. I think every time you slide and your hand blocks a shot that is on target, it's a penalty. I don't care.
Okay, so good. Now let me now pitch another.
Because you're now making yourself bigger on the floor.
Okay, now before we move on now, let me paint you another picture. Let's say now you're a defender and I'm attacker, yeah? Are you listening? So both of us, a cross is coming into the box and I jump, and I jump and you jump. Then I now flick the ball to the back post. And you're trying to defend me, and the ball flicks out, and the ball hits part of your arm, and the referee gives a decision and say that's a penalty. How will you feel as a defender?
Because it depends on where my arm was. If my arm
was above, that's what I'm saying. Your arm, when you're jumping, is in a natural position because you have to extend your arm to propel yourself to go into the air. Let's not act like this. All these things are not physical.
Okay. So, propel, if I'm jumping, my arms are spread out, yeah?
No, you don't have to spread out your arm so that you cover everywhere. But your arm will still be extended so that you can get the maximum jump that you can actually get from your
I think there's a limit to where your arms should spread out to. If your arms are
way up, you know I'm bringing up this matter. This is what happened to Eric Dier, where I think it was against Newcastle, where Mourinho was still their coach and they gave them that harsh penalty.
That's I remember that last season. It was ridiculous.
That's what I'm saying to you. This is the same thing with Gerard Piqué. Gerard Piqué was already going to the ground. His hand was swinging downwards. It wasn't swinging out.
That's what I explained to you, that he already made himself bigger on the floor and his hand made him even bigger. So for me, it's a penalty. Can we just... Let's just drop it.
No problem.
Agree with the fact that when you're standing or where you're jumping, I judge those differently from when you're sliding, because when you're sliding, it already shows that you don't even defend the situation properly. You're having to make a desperate last tackle. And if you have to make that, you cannot now have an advantage as well for your poor defending and poor positioning. It will now give you a further advantage. You say that, okay, when you were sliding, you had to...
No problem. You know what's funny about all these things? We think we know it all until it happens to the club we support. So, no problem. We'll move on.
Yeah, no. If it happens to the club I support, I'll take it on the chin and move on, because this is my opinion. Like, whichever club it happens to,
no problem. It's calm.
It will just be painful if it's in a Champions League final. That's all. But
okay, no problem.
But for the game itself, I think Barcelona got away with. I don't know. They just got away with murder, because for the last 20 minutes, I don't like what you said when Xavi changed the system. I don't understand why he did that, and Barcelona were just put under the. Under the coach, like a lot of good situations for Villarreal, which of usually the typical Villarreal, they wasted all their chances. Surprise, surprise. And then Barcelona punished them. Coutinho coming on to get a discussion. Nice for him personally, but I think Barcelona fans shouldn't get carried away, because the performance has to be better than this, I think.
The truth is, like I said to you, so many Barcelona fans I've spoken to, they know that like it's not going to change. Like, some of all these Koeman tactics are still there, something that they've been working on for months. So Xavi is just three. This was his third match in charge. So I think, given time, I think Xavi will do better. I think there was a bit of naivety and inexperience there, that by changing the system. But at the end of the day, we all know that Xavi was. Xavi is still trying to learn and trying to get his philosophies into this player. So I think at the end of the day, what Barcelona will be happy with the 3 points, but I feel like Xavi himself won't be happy with the performance too. And part of it was his own fault too. So I feel at the end of the day, 3 points, all good and fine. They move on to the next, and they need to improve if they seriously want to challenge for the top four.
Yeah, you move on. I think this is the kind of game where you just quickly move on. You just celebrate the fact that you didn't play well, you got the 3 points, then you're happy with that. But deep down, you know that you need to do better, but you don't really blast the players too much if you're Xavi. You just accept it, because you've not been in the job long enough to start doing that. If not, the players might quickly go against you if you start blasting them after they've won a match as a new coach. So I think it's just one of those things where you're happy, you escape, and you move on. I don't know. Let me just leave Barcelona, because at least they escaped. Real Madrid against Sevilla. Okay, just funny. Barcelona, I heard this is the first away match they are winning all season in the La Liga. And so that's quite interesting. Then for Real Madrid, you have a case of almost the same thing, escaping and getting away with murder. Sevilla, for me, should have gotten a penalty. They didn't get it. Sevilla took the lead. Then Sevilla's keeper came bearing gifts for Karim Benzema, gave him a goal, early Christmas present. Then Vinicius Jr., I mean, I don't know when you start giving this guy his respect that he deserves. The Black Messiah coming to the rescue. Once again. And then the keeper, Sevilla's keeper, had a chance to equalize at the death, but of course, he had to miss it. Like yeah, miss the I ball, saw... like miss the ball entirely, not just like miss the chance.
Yeah, I saw part of the game. I was on a call, so I wasn't concentrating too much, but I saw part of the game. And I think the first goal from Real Madrid could be avoided because I don't understand what the keeper was trying to do.
You're sounding too nice. Let's just blast this keeper for once. It was a gift.
The thing is, I don't like blasting people. And for the first time, like you all know how I feel about Vinicius Junior. And I'll raise my hand and say, I think I was wrong. So I think I was very wrong because
there's one of my friends that listens to this podcast a lot, and he texted me this morning. He was like,
okay, what did he say?
Well, let me even look for exactly what he said, so I won't just misquote him. Let me say exactly what he said. Leonard and Vinny hate, and he keeps dragging Leonard in the mud week in, week out. So that just shows you that you've been hating on greatness, and now you finally realize.
Let's not get carried away. I don't know what we mean by greatness. Let's not get carried away. What I'm saying is, for the first time, I realized that there is actually a very, very talented player in Vinicius Junior. So I feel like giving the right environment and the right, if they nurture him very well, he might end up being one of the top players that we talk about in the near future.
Oh, you're still saying might. Okay, so it's like a partial hit now. There's no might.
I don't understand. Do I see the future? Wait. Are we turning this podcast to tomorrow future or something? We're talking about things we can see. I don't understand.
Okay, I'll give you an out because seeing promising players like Alexandre Pato and Mario Balotelli that we thought would reach the heights, but they didn't. So I'll say, okay, I understand if you're coming from that angle that not every young prodigy makes it to the top. I understand that, but Vinicius just looks like he has finally learned how to finish, and that was always his problem. So I think he's headed for the top. For Madrid, you take it, you move on, just like Barcelona. It wasn't their best game, but who cares? They are top of the league. And so now let's go to the Premier League. We had the big game at Stamford Bridge where everyone said Chelsea would tear United apart. You had people predicting, Chelsea fans just clowning themselves, predicting 5-0, 4-0, like football is like that. And then we had a case of United didn't even come to win. Like United just came to park the bus. We had three defensive midfielders, Fred, Matic, McTominay. We had no Ronaldo, which I think was Rafinha, not Michael Carrick, but Michael Carrick coming to say that he's the one that bench Ronaldo. Yeah, right. Like you have the mind to do that. So I think it was interesting that Rafinha already. Oh wait, first, do you think it was Carrick or Rafinha? Let's start from there. That bench Ronaldo.
I don't like looking into things that are not there. But the truth is, when I saw the
lineup, let me tell you, it was there. Should I tell you why it was there?
Okay.
You had Darren Fletcher, who has never been in the dugout for United before. We know he has been like a youth coach or whatever, but this was his first match in the dugout, Darren Fletcher. And then he had an earpiece on. I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, he had an earpiece.
What?
I didn't notice.
Okay, he had an earpiece plugged to his phone. And then he would listen to it and walk. Like, so he'll be on his feet. He'll be like seated listening to whatever he's listening to. And then he'll come to the edge of the pitch and start backing out orders to the players, not consulting Michael Carrick. If at all you're there to assist Carrick, then you need to talk to Carrick and say what you think. Then Carrick then says, okay, tell the players whatever you've told me just now, or let me tell the players what you just told me. But he bypassed Carrick and started backing out others that were given to him by Rafinha, because you cannot tell me he was listening to music.
The truth is, like I was saying, I felt like when I saw the lineup, I was like, this is not Carrick's doing. So I think there's an higher authority that he answered to by benching Ronaldo. Exactly. Because when you saw the tactics he went for, This is like, what would I put it? A kind of mini gegenpress, but just, we all know great gegenpress is like counter-pressing from the front, win the ball high up the pitch and score. But the midfield he went for is like a gegenpress kind of midfield where you don't go for creative players. You go for players that can cover ground and cover spaces. Like, do you understand? Like, those are the midfield they try to go for, which is Carrick. I know Carrick is old, but Carrick can still... Matic. Sorry for the mistake. Which is Matic. We know Matic can still cover spaces, even if he can't cover ground. But Fred and McTominay, they were everywhere, especially Fred. Fred was covering ground and spaces so much in that match. So I felt like it was a tactics where with the current setup and with the current injuries United had in their back line, they had to go for that kind of tactics to face a very brilliant team in Chelsea. And at the end of the day, I won't say the tactics worked to the full entirety or worked to the way that they thought it would work. Because Chelsea, they were very, very poor in finishing. Because if Chelsea had finished the chances, especially that bomb I've been saying, or Osinodoy, who they hype so much. Then this would be a different story. No one would be saying Carrick masterclass or whatever. They were fortunate that on a day that they couldn't finish.
You know what irks me and irritates me about managers is when you come out and you start trying to sound like you're better than you are. So after the match, Carrick came and said he was disappointed with the draw. Like, fam, are you kidding me? You're disappointed going to Stamford Bridge against the table toppers and getting a point. With the way they played. Do you know what? I told you previously I was predicting a 2-0 or a 3-1, a 2-goal margin for Chelsea. But without that Jorginho error, there's no way in hell the United would have gotten a goal.
They were not threatening.
The chance that Mendy gave Fred, who ruined all his good work of the day by missing that chance, and then United fans started blasting him, forgetting how well he actually played in the match. So you had two errors. One, they capitalized on. The other, Fred let Mendy off the hook. And then you come out to say you're disappointed with the point. Like, are you kidding me? Like, what did United actually play? To me, I see it as, I wouldn't even say it was a masterclass or a tactical masterclass. I'll say it was, like you said, it was poor finishing from Chelsea. Timo Werner, I don't know, he should see a psychologist. Like, what is happening to him is not normal anymore. Like, no movement. Like, Reece James would have been fed up with his teammates. Reece James put in about 4 very good crosses, if not more. And then what happened? United players kept clearing it. It was a case of they weren't even trying to attack the ball, getting in the right position.
They were not making the proper runs.
Exactly. So for me, the finger is at Timo Werner there because he's the only striker there. Hudson-Odoi, Hakim Ziyech probably wouldn't have that proper movement. So, and I think he left. I think Hudson-Odoi played the full match, did he? He was taking off. It was Ziyech that played the full match. For me, Ziyech and both of them should have been taking off a long time before they were actually taking off. And for me, another thing is Lukaku being on the bench. Because there's something Thomas Tuchel said that makes me think that he got it wrong. He said that Lukaku played longer than they wanted him to play. And here's me thinking that Lukaku played 10 minutes. And the coach is saying that he shouldn't have even played up to 10 minutes. So if someone is not fit to play up to 10 minutes, why isn't he taking space on your bench? You might as well put someone else that can actually impact the game. Because it just sounded like a luxury sub that wasn't really going to make any difference.
Maybe they felt like they will win the match and they will not bring him on in the last 5 minutes or so.
Come on, 5 minutes to come and laugh at United for selling him. I mean, you need to plan better than that. You can't have a player that is not fit enough for more than 10 minutes. I think that was just ridiculous from Thomas Tuchel. But at the end of the day, Chelsea are still top. Now, I've seen a vision now after this weekend. I've seen
TB
a vision.
Joshua. Let's hear it.
I've seen a vision, and I'll tell you. The winner of the Premier League now, after this weekend, we saw the winners of the Premier League this weekend.
Who is the winner?
Manchester City are going to defend their title. And here's why.
Your vision is capped. It's full of cap.
Okay, now let me tell you why.
Okay, let me hear.
Chelsea have dropped points against Burnley and United at home. Back-to-back games at home without winning. It has been long ahead of a champion that cannot win back-to-back home games. That's one. Secondly, these are games that you should be winning. Of course, United are a big club, but in poor form. And then you can't beat them. And Burnley are Burnley, so you can't tell me why you cannot be beating Burnley. Now, we're always coming back to say the same thing. Chelsea played well, but they couldn't just win. If you continue playing well, you can't just win. You cannot win the league that way. Now, I'll go to Liverpool. Liverpool won 4-0, but without Alisson, that could have been 3-3. Because, first of all, Ralph Hotel playing three strikers was naive, thinking you can go to Anfield and match Liverpool stride for stride, toe-to-toe. But the thing is, they had their chances. And Liverpool defended badly, but they won 4-0. So, casual football fans will say, well, they got a clean sheet, they scored 4 goals, so all is well. But even Jurgen Klopp, after the match, knew that all was not well. Because he pointed out the fact that Alisson had to save a shot one-on-one. So Liverpool have been defending like this for weeks. Just that Alisson has been making saves and they've been keeping clean sheets. You can't continue escaping this all through the season. City look for me like the most complete side. They keep the ball so much that they hardly give the opponents chances. So judging by what we've seen this weekend and what we've been seeing for the past 4 weeks, this is the same thing they've been doing. Liverpool defending badly but winning. Chelsea creating chances, not taking them. So I think City are going to win this Premier League. And finally, like before, I couldn't wrap my head around it, like who was actually going to win. But now, I'm going to say that City are going to win this Premier League.
Okay, cool. So now you've touched on City, Liverpool, you've touched on their games. Cool. Now, let me explain something to you. The truth is, I hate to admit this. You know, I don't like Chelsea, but I respect Chelsea. Whenever Chelsea wants to win a title, everyone that knows football should just hear me out for a sec. When Chelsea wants to win a title, they end up having one of the most defensive structure that is hard to beat in the entire Europe. The entire Europe, no club will want to face them, which is one. Secondly, when Chelsea wants to win a title, they don't concede chances. Like, it's very hard for you to score against them. Now, you can say, oh, Chelsea should be winning games against Manchester United, which is cool. But at the end of the day, Manchester City lost to Crystal Palace 2-0. Manchester City should be winning that game as well. So, like... I can come and say this Chelsea one is a one-off. Let's not even talk like they're playing a bomb, Manchester United. Yes, Liverpool smashed them. Man City smashed them. You cannot expect everyone to be smashing Man U. At the point, they will still wake up. That is the truth. Even when Liverpool were winning league titles, they find it difficult to win Manchester United. It's not a new thing. So the truth is, I think everyone is being reactionary after one result. And I'll tell you this. I think we all know now. Thank God now we are at the busy end of the season. There are games almost every day of the week now. So by January, we'll know who is supposed to win the title.
Do you remember I told you? I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but I know I told you, even if it was off air, that after the Burnley result, I told you that when you were telling me Chelsea played well and they were unlucky not to win, I told you that this is the match that will make Chelsea not to win the title. Do you remember when I said it?
This season is a 32-game season.
Forget about that. But do you remember?
I remember clearly.
Because you're competing against... You see, the funny thing is, this is the first time in the Premier League that, for me, we have the best four teams in Europe. We have three of them in England. Then we have Bayern Munich as the fourth one. PSG, until they get their whatever they are doing together, they are not in the top four teams in Europe. So this is a title race where you're not just competing against the best in England, you're competing against the best in Europe. You can drop points, and I told you this thing, there are teams you drop points to, and you know that, okay, you were given a game, these are worthy opponents. There's no way you should be dropping points to Burnley. there's no way he should be dropping points to this version of Manchester United. And for me, I didn't even need this United drop to tell me that Chelsea will not win the league. I just needed the Burnley
result.
The Burnley result to tell me that they are not ready to win the league.
Okay, just hear me out. At the beginning of the season, Manchester United lost to a very poor Tottenham side. If you guys remember, this is what I'm saying. They lost to Tottenham. They lost to... Just hear me out. They lost to Tottenham. They lost to... they lost to... What is it called? They lost to... They lost to Crystal Palace. And now, we're not being reactionary.
They lost to Tottenham.
Now, in the Premier League as well, Liverpool, who you're saying they're favourite as well, they lost to West Ham. They drew to Brentford. They draw point as well. What I'm just saying is, at the end of the day, this is why I'm so confident that Chelsea will win the league. I've said this and I'll say it again. When Chelsea wants to win the league or anything, any title, just watch their defensive records and watch the way teams don't watch the way they shut out teams and teams don't get chances against them. That is something that since Abramovich took over, their DNA of winning teams is having a solid backline, and this Chelsea team have the most solid backline in the entire Europe, and no one can tell me any difference.
Okay. So, you know, the only out I'll give, I agree with you about Chelsea's defense being very good, but maybe the best in Europe, yes. But for me, the only way they can win this league is if Lukaku goes back to the Lukaku of Inter Milan last season. Because what is clear now, the pattern is already set. The pattern is, you win 3 games in a row, everybody says, oh, Chelsea are favorites. Then you draw a game that you should win. And then everybody says, oh, we played well, we're unlucky. But the fact is, those games you keep drawing at the end of the season is going to hamper you. So unless Lukaku starts firing and starts converting some of these chances that are being created, that are being wasted by the likes of Timo Werner, unless we see the Lukaku of last season, Chelsea cannot win the league. That's all I will now say. It doesn't matter how your defense is. If we don't see the Lukaku of last season, Chelsea are not going to win the Premier League.
Well, I get what you mean, but I think at the end of the day, we're just being reactionary. There are still a lot of games to go, and I think Chelsea will still be in the conversation come March.
No, I'm not saying they won't be in the conversation. They will be in the conversation, but they will not win it.
And as we speak, they are still first in the table, so I think it's still a long way to go, like I said.
Of course, they are still first in the table, which might not be the case as early as this weekend. They have back-to-back games against Watford and West Ham, and then they can't out.
Are you saying Chelsea can't win those games?
Oh, Chelsea were meant to win Burnley, were they not?
But can you put your money on it that Chelsea can't win both games? Is that what I'm hearing?
Chelsea can win Watford. I'm not sure about West Ham.
Okay, we'll see. Come the end. Come next week when we record. We'll see.
I'm not sure. If we have Lukaku back against Watford and he plays well, then I'll say yes. Since Lukaku is fit, they can win West Ham at the weekend. But if Lukaku is not fit, I don't trust Hudson-Odoi and Timo Werner up front. I'm sorry.
But Hudson-Odoi hasn't been the only one scoring. Chelsea defenders are chipping their goals as well. So Chelsea are getting goals from every part of the pitch, midfield, defense. Everyone is scoring. So at the end of the day,
the only thing that can save them is if they go out and get a proper creative player in January. Because Chelsea just have creative players in name. They tell me Hudson-Odoi is a winger, Pulisic, Hakim Ziyech, blah, 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 blah. They don't create chances. The only person that creates chances is Reece James. So unless they improve and actually start creating chances like they are meant to be doing, or Chelsea go out in January and get a proper creative player, then we can start talking about them winning the league.
Okay. It's fine.
So I've already touched on Liverpool's game. I've already touched on City's game. The only thing that irritated me about City's game was the fact that they conceded in the last minute, and I had Cancelo in my FPL. But it is what it.
Yeah, I was happy that did that happen because I didn't have Cancelo in my team. That was very good. Thank God for Lanzini.
Enemy of progress. And you know the very painful thing was Cancelo was on 5 points because he had a yellow card. And then he was going to
have 2 bonus points, yeah.
So for me, like Cancelo would have gotten 7 points. It was just very painful. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. We move. We also saw Arsenal beat Newcastle. Not too much to be said about this. Newcastle are, I mean, they are looking more and more doomed to fail.
they are doomed to fail, but the thing is, the only thing I want to talk about the game is Aubameyang. Like, African players coming their clubs. After getting a new contract, they start missing sitters, three-yard sitters.
Okay. So, which miss was worse? Aubameyang's miss. Now, remember that Arsenal actually won the game. Rudiger's miss, last minute. Of which Rudiger actually came out to give something of an apology, saying that he should have scored and blah, 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 blah. And Chelsea fans were comforting him on social media, saying, don't worry, we forgive you. There's nothing to forgive. Ridiculous nonsense.
But you really missed a chance. It's all steps of Harry Maguire. So go on.
Exactly. And Bruno Fernandes. And then, so you have Aubameyang's miss, Rudiger's miss, and Fred's miss. Which one is the worst? Considering what they're close
to. I don't know. That, see, the Rudiger one and the Fred one, they were far from the post. Aubameyang was 3-4 yards from the post. Like,
Did you just say Rudiger was far from the post?
No. Rudiger was still at least far from the post. Aubameyang was on the post. Just put the ball at the back of the net. He was literally on the post. Just put the ball at the back of the net. Like, even with your eyes closed.
You know why? I can even forgive Aubameyang for two reasons. His club won. That's one. Secondly, it's one of those things. Like, it's a fluke. Like, give Aubameyang that chance 9 out of 10 times. He scores 9.
No, like, not give the Let's not do that.
I have to do that because he scores.
No, the Aubameyang have been watching since.
You see Rudiger.
It's the last 8 months. Okay.
You see Rudiger. Give him that in 10 times. He will miss it 9 times and score 1.
Because he's a defender.
No. Because he doesn't calm down. That's why. You should in that situation, you can take a touch and then strike. He's trying to score a... like, you read this comic, Super Strikers, when we were little, right? He's trying to score a Super Strikers goal. Like, you want to volley it out of the sky. You don't need to do that. You can afford to take a touch and then place your foot through it. So, it's just a lack of...
Let's ask the audience, yeah? Who do you think had the worst miss? To me, Aubameyang, but Josh is saying Rudiger. So, let's hear from you guys. I think that would be fair for them to answer.
Yeah, then over in the Bundesliga, we had Erling Haaland doing what Erling Haaland does. I was actually surprised that he actually played this weekend. So it was nice to see. And then he told his coach that he should have given him more time, that he would have scored 2 goals instead of 1.
I think they are rushing that guy back. You see the problem? I don't like with all these things. De Bruyne has not been the same since they started forcing him, injecting him because of his ankle so that he could play matches. The same thing they are doing in Haaland. Allow their injury heal so that they can be more productive for you and be fully fit. This is the same thing with Ansu Fati. The same thing. Like, and name more players. There's no need rushing these guys, man. It's annoying to see.
Yeah, I agree with you, but at the end of the day, Haaland himself doesn't feel like he's being rushed back. He thinks he's ready because I just said that he told his coach he should have even given him more time on the pitch. So,
But the thing is, as a coach, you have to save the young players from themselves because they feel that they can play every game because of their youthful and their energy that they bring. But at the end of the day, like, look at Pedri right now. Pedri played. You have to save them from themselves because they are young and they don't know what is good for them.
Okay, so my boy Florian Wirtz getting on the score sheet as Leverkusen beats Leipzig 3-1. I don't want to talk about the game. I just want to talk about Florian Wirtz. This is the next big thing in world of football, just 18 years old. And they're calling him the next Kai Havertz. I think that was an insult to Florian Wirtz. I think he's going to be better than Kai Havertz.
Yeah, I think that's a big insult. I remember a few weeks ago when someone told me about the guy, I went to start watching. You know when you start watching videos and highlights on YouTube and clips and montages, you don't stop. You just start watching. Before you know it, 2 hours is gone and your data is finished. that's what I was doing. I was like, man, this guy is good. He's silky. He has his IQ. He reads the game very, very well. So I think he's the next big thing as well.
It's better than Pedri, so I'm just going to throw that out there. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Well, I'll say not by much, but I think he has a higher ceiling. I think right now Pedri is better. But
I don't know why you're backtracking. I just said, of course. So I don't know why you're backtracking.
No. Let me just explain. Let me shallow it more. So I think right now, 2021, Pedri is better. But at the peak of their powers, who has the higher ceiling? I think Florian Wirtz has the higher ceiling. Like at his best, he's going to be better than Pedri's best.
I don't like comparing players, but I know that if both of them have the right manager and playing the right system, they'll both be shining high come the near future.
And then just to touch on Bayern broke a Bundesliga record, 102 goals in a calendar year, and they still have 4 games left this year. The record has stood since 1977. Cologne sets the record, and now they've smashed the record.
Bayern, they're always trying to judge. What they are doing there is trying world domination. They're not playing football anymore. They're just dominating everything.
I've said it before that Bayern is the standard of football, and I'm sticking with that comment. So
yeah, no surprise. so many clubs have to learn how Bayern structure things behind the scenes as well. So I think they are the standard. Everyone should work.
Behind the scenes, the fans are actually angry with the club because they have a sponsorship deal with Qatar. And we all know that Qatar has not the best record of human rights. So the fans want Bayern, they don't want their club to be associated with Qatar. And now they are calling on the likes of Oliver Kahn, who is the Bayern Munich CEO, to resign. Like, they don't like what he's doing there. And the president as well.
The truth is, people always think the grass is greener. Don't worry, when Oliver Kahn resigns and they hire someone like Bartomeu, they will start crying for Oliver Kahn to come back. So.
Let's not swear for Bayern Munich now, shall we? Shall we not?
No. The reason why I'm saying this here, like, Barcelona fans do this thing too. They are so spoiled. They have everything, winning things constantly, playing one of the best football.
Did you see Barcelona's president yesterday? Very emotional, almost moved to tears with his Barcelona players getting a lot of success yesterday at the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, I knew he would be emotional because before he went to the award, there was something a journalist asked him. So I don't know. I think it was in French or so. But I was seeing the tweet. I saw the translation on Twitter, and it was like, Barcelona is on its way to rebuild its pride, and he's just trying to say Barcelona is on its way to rebuild their pride. But the way he said it, like, it felt like. He knows Barcelona, it's not a good place right now. And it hurts him so much to see that Barcelona is not in a good place right now. So,
and Pedri winning the Young Player of the Year is a step in the right direction, I guess. So,
I was so happy for the Barcelona women because they achieved a lot. So, I was so happy for them.
And so they bullied everybody last year. That's what they did. They bullied teams. They didn't just beat teams. They bullied them.
Yeah. So should we look at the fixtures for this midweek?
Just shortly before we do that, I just want to touch on two things. Neymar got a nasty injury and he's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. But then Messi got the game. It looks like the real Messi is finally showing up at Paris.
I feel it's still early because when Messi starts, he doesn't stop. We all know this. And I think this is what I'm saying. It's not these things are not fair to Lewandowski. Lewandowski will still end up having one of the best years this year. But I feel like when Messi starts scoring, and even in the league it plays, because let's be real, the Ligue 1 is not as competitive as the rest of the entire leagues in Europe. Messi can score like 50-plus goals, have like 20 assists, and still, he will still be in the conversation in top three next season. And he might even have a good World Cup year because of the Argentina team. So it's crazy at the end of the day.
So for Messi, I think Argentina have a decent chance of winning the World Cup. So for me, I'll say Argentina, France, Germany are my early favorites right now. But things can
still change. I think three of them will definitely get to the semis.
I won't say definitely because you still have the likes of Spain that can sneak in there. You still have the likes of Brazil.
Can get in there as well. That's true.
You still have the Brazil. You still have the likes of England who, for one reason or the other, keep getting to the latter stages of tournaments.
Even though England, they are on fraud watch. They're on fraud watch.
So, I don't know. But, okay, let's now end on... This is just bizarre. This is the strangest thing I've seen this season. In the Portuguese league, the Premier Liga, we had Benfica against Belenenses on Saturday. Now, Belenenses were hit with COVID so badly that they couldn't even put out a starting 11. They started the game with 9 players. Have you ever heard that before?
Huh? What?
Okay. They started the game with 9 players and they had 2 keepers. One of the keepers was playing in midfield.
Eh?
So
wait. Is this a football movie or it happened in real life?
It happened in real life just this weekend on Saturday.
Oh my god. So, tell me they won the match.
Okay, Benfica were leading them 7-0 at halftime.
Jesus. Eh?
And then the match would have even continued to the end, but 2 players got injured. Of course, there were no substitutes. If you have 9 players, you cannot have any substitutes. 2 of their players got injured and they were down to 7. And it was when they were down to 7 that they now abandoned the match. So, for me, it's just sad to see that the head of the Portuguese, like the league association or whatever, how can you allow this kind of match to go on? And you had the president of Belenenses rightly came out and he was really emotional. He said that football lost his soul, that football only has a soul when it's competitive and fair, and that football lost his soul today. And I really felt for him because how can you allow a team that are already underdogs to go out with 9 players and 1 keeper in the midfield?
What happened to postponement?
What?
I said, what happened to postponement? Why can't they postpone the match?
Belenenses applied for the match to be postponed and the league rejected the application and said that the match must go on. So it was just sad to see. It was ridiculous. My God.
My God.
Now Benfica will tell themselves that they won it a match 7-0. Just shameless.
Benfica, every one of them that participated in that match be ashamed, man. I know it's not their fault.
At the end of the day, you say it's not their fault because they are not the ones that insisted the match should go on. Or maybe they were the ones behind the scenes. We don't know. But now they are saying... So now, you know what's ridiculous? They said that they will carry out an investigation whether health... whether the match complied with health rules. What sort of investigation do you need if you saw that they clearly had only 9 players to start the game? So what are you still investigating?
Oh my God, man. I don't know. Maybe there's something they're punishing the other team for. I don't know. But it doesn't seem right and fair.
It's not. It's absolutely unfair. Okay, so now just to touch on the preview for this weekend's games, just the big games, I think, or the big clubs, not necessarily the big games. I think Chelsea will win Watford. We can both agree on that, right?
That's straightforward. Chelsea will win.
Now, I'll tell you why it's straightforward. Because Watford have injuries. Because if Watford are full strength, then they will probably cause this Chelsea team problems. But Emmanuel Dennis...
Watford have full strength or not, Chelsea will win that game. I don't care. This is Chelsea FC.
Same thing we said about Burnley, bro.
No, this is Chelsea FC, the champions of Europe. Let's not cap now.
City, Aston Villa, this is a big test for Steven Gerrard.
I think this is a very terrible test, but I think City at the end of the day will win. They are just so silky these days. The way they play football, man, it's actually mesmerizing.
Okay, so you agree with me that they are going to win the Premier League. Thank you very much.
That's not what I said. I didn't agree with you. That's not what I said. That's not what I said. Stop twisting my words.
We have the Premier League. I said we have the Premier League. We have the Merseyside Derby. I think Liverpool are just going to be too strong for Everton.
I think for the first time in a long time, this Merseyside Derby is very, very obvious who is going to win. Because the previous year's one, even if
I think some Liverpool fans are already calling Rafa Benitez, agent Rafa, that he's went to Everton to destroy them. That's unfair.
Exactly. When they're to it, truthfully, he has destroyed them because Everton in their last 5, they've lost 4 and drew just 1. And the draw came from Tottenham. The last 5, they've lost.
But we can't say he's doing that on purpose. We can't say it's on purpose.
No, it's not on purpose. But like at the end of the day, the fact is that they are currently one of the worst teams in the Premier League right now, and I think I expect Liverpool to smash them, something like 3-0.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think 3-0 will be fair enough. I think that's what I'll say as well. And then the most difficult game to call, the United versus Arsenal game at Old Trafford. This is
really
so tight.
Really? Is it that difficult to call?
Really? Yeah, it is because United have been rubbish. Forget that Chelsea made them look good this weekend. Arsenal are in form.
Okay, so who do you think will win?
I say Arsenal will not lose the game.
Okay, I say Manchester United wins this game.
Okay.
And I think we'll have this goal.
Just quickly, FPL, we have games, obviously. So let's just touch on transfers and the likes.
Okay, so cool. I don't know. There's so many flag players these days. People that have 4 stars, their goalkeeper, Reece James, even Phil Foden as well. So what are the top targets we should be bringing in, and even the pawns in midfield areas as well.
So if you have Foden, I think you sell him. I think you sell him because he has clearly been struggling for the last 2 weeks. Now, even 2 weeks ago, I don't think he should have played. I think Guardiola rushed him back, and now he's regretting it because he has missed 2 games now since then, the Champions League and this past weekend, and Foden will not play this game, I'm almost sure of it. So I think you can get Jota if you don't have him already, or Maxwell Cornet. Both of them are good shouts to replace Phil Foden. I think Reece James might play, but if he doesn't play, I think you should have a good enough bench. This is why I hammer on having a good bench. You should not sell Reece James for any reason. So Reece James is not someone you should sell because he's increasing in value every second. And I think if you have a good bench, then yes, you can cope. Then for Ben Foster, I think a lot of people have Ben Foster as their second keeper anyway. So probably just your first keeper will be good enough for you.
Some fixtures. What are the fixtures that, like, for example, if your team is kind of safe, what are the fixtures that we should be targeting, their players that we should bring in?
I would have said target Chelsea players, but which Chelsea player is going to score? So the thing is, I think Lukaku will play, but I don't know if he will start. And Lukaku, if Lukaku gets 30 minutes against Watford, he can get on the score sheet. So I say Lukaku, you can target Lukaku. And you can target Marcos Alonso, especially if his James is not fit, then we are sure that Alonso will start left and maybe Aspi comes right. So I think Alonso and Lukaku are people you can get. Then I think Maxwell Cornet as well, who I mentioned already, I think he's someone that we should be looking to bring in. He's in good form and they play against Wolves. Wolves are not the strongest team defensively. And for me, those are the two main fixtures we should be targeting. And Vardy is back in form. We saw him get a brace this weekend. And playing against Southampton, he can easily get on the score sheet again. And then Crystal Palace players. I've already mentioned Benteke and Gallagher on the previous episode. I think you should still have an eye on them.
Okay. Okay, so you mentioned that Jamie Vardy show. So Should people start considering getting like Jamie Vardy in? Because I won't lie, like I sold him some weeks ago.
No, I was always patient for this one because for me, the good one was always going to start from the Watford game. So now that he got returns there, I think, see, Vardy is a very tricky player. Vardy can score in 5 games in a row and then blank for 4 games in a row and then score for 4 games in a row, then blank. So he has already had his 4 games in a row blanking. I think now he's going to hit form.
Okay, so people should definitely get him in. All right, cool. The most asked questions. So, who is the captain for this week?
Now this is hard because normally hard? I would say it is. Normally I would say Salah, but Salah's goal record against Everton is dreadful. Salah has only 1 goal in his last 8 appearances or so against Everton. And you add the fact that Alexander Arnold has actually outscored Salah in the past 3 weeks. So if you had been captaining Arnold instead of Salah, you'd have been getting more points. And then also add the fact that Lukaku is playing against Watford, who are not the best defensively. So I think you can look at Lukaku if he starts. That's the problem. We don't know if he's going to start. But if Lukaku starts, it's a good option. Then we can look at Salah as well as an option. And we can look at Vardy as an option.
Right. For the first time, the disciple of Salah is not sure. It's interesting. Okay.
No, I'm not sure, but I'm still going to captain it. That's just it, because I don't have Lukaku.
Okay, so let me ask you. What is the one thing you think will happen in this midweek game week? What's the one thing you think will happen?
Like, is it in terms of a team winning or a club or a player scoring?
Anything you think will happen in the entire league this weekend? What do you think will happen?
Chelsea will win Watford.
Okay, cool. For me, I'll just say, finally, after months of blanking, Harry Kane will get his second Premier League goal this game week.
That's a big shout. I hope it happens because I have Kane, but that's a very big shout.
No problem. We'll revisit it in the next episode. So, thank you guys for listening. It's been great having you. I hope you enjoyed the episode. And cheers to you guys for always tuning in. So, we'll see you in the next one. God bless you.